Hey guys, welcome to the MC Anime Podcast.
We cover anime, geek culture, Japanese aesthetics, and Asian studies. We are a multi-fandom podcast, and you can expect to hear topics in your favorite hobby or fandom activity potentially. You can find MC Anime on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Also, please check out mcanimepodcast.com, our website. Furthermore, stay tuned in for another episode.
Guys, welcome to another episode of MCMA Podcast. MC here, and today I have a really special guest with me today, Cosmic Punch. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thanks. How are you?
Pretty good. Before we get into the episode, tell them a little about yourself, what you do, and where they can find you, stuff like that.
All right, well, I'm the artist that created Cosmic Punch. It's a nerd rock project, and I only sing about science fiction and nerdy stuff, and you can find it at cosmicpunch.com, and from there you'll be able to find the links to the music, the links to all the music videos. I just put out a new record called For All Nerd Kind, and the newest video, or the first single of the record is called I Love Anime, and I figured, you know, MC Anime would have an appreciation for this kind of thing. And yeah, it's all a bunch of CGI. You're going to see a lot of your favorite classic anime characters dancing and being silly. And the whole song is just a big praise tribute to the art form. I grew up on anime, so why not write a song about it? Nobody else is. I figured I'd write a song about it, right?
And today's episode is going to be Cosmic Punch and For All Nerd Kind. We're going to go in depth about the album and how you wrote it and that type of stuff. What inspired the album? Like, what was All Nerd Kind all about when it first started?
Well, Cosmic Punch, the whole the most recent record, which is the Club of Nerd Dads, that was also another all nerd record where I only sing about nerdy stuff, pop culture. That one had songs about people that do table games, people that are into Star Wars and complain on the internet. So it's just kind of like, you can write songs. The previous Cosmic Punch records had elements of that and had other songs that were like, you know, your basic love songs, that kind of thing. But when my writing partner left, I said, I'm going to take the project in an all nerd direction because I feel that there isn't anybody singing about this stuff. And why not? It's a whole other planet. It's a whole other thing. And there's a lot of people out there that are singing about pretty miserable things and politics and being broken up by girlfriends and boyfriends, et cetera, whatever. And that's cool. They can do that all day long and twice on Sunday. I'm going to sing about Star Wars and stuff and have fun with that, too. And I wanted music that I'd be happy to let my children listen to. So why not write about stuff that I'm forcing them to watch, if that makes sense. Can't hear you, bud. Can't hear you.
So with that being said, what started Cosmic Punch the way it is now?
Well, like I said, my writing partner left, and that was fine, you know, but I just decided to make it all nerd, and I play all the instruments anyway. I do all the instruments, I sing all the vocals, I produce the records, write all the songs, make the videos, I do it all in-house, it's all just me. And so, yeah, you know, when you have control over an entire car that you've built, then drive it on the roads you want to drive it on, right? So that's pretty much the inspiration.
So the car that was your inspiration and then you started for music?
Yeah, okay. No, I was likening the musical project to like a car that you've built from scratch. And gotcha. That's what I meant. It had nothing to do with that. Although I love cars, I have a 1983 Datsun 280ZX. And it's a big money pit, and I just dump tons of money into it like a schmuck. But, you know, it's fun. I love cars.
Right. So, before Cosmic Punch became reality, what were you doing as singing? Were you in singing at all?
Well, I was in other musical projects, but most of my career in music business was spent as an audio engineer and a tour manager touring for all kinds of pop, heavy metal bands and all that. I've been all over the world. I did that for 23 years, and I still had my musical projects during that time. But ever since I kind of retired from touring is when I was able to kind of dive kind of head first in more of my musical projects. And I put out a record about once a year, different stuff. I have two projects that I'm currently going back and forth on. This one and another one called Apex Zenith, which is like 80s synth pop kind of stuff. But I've been singing all my life. I've been in bands all my life. I've worked in the music business all my life. I don't know anything else. So I just keep doing it until the day that I can't, I guess.
Oh, okay. What is it about Noid culture that you like to incorporate in the music medium?
Well, what do I like about it? I mean, everything. I grew up on science fiction, and I played video games, and I did all the stuff that a good nerd should do. I've had a computer in front of my face since I was 10. And I grew up in the 80s, so that would have been like an old Radio Shack with 16K of memory, and you learned how to code in BASIC, and you learned how to do this stuff because Matthew Broderick did it on War Games, and you just kind of move forward. And being a nerd is something that it happens to you as a because of your environment and because of what you choose to surround yourself with. And you'd be surprised how many cool people that, you know, are objectively cool our closet nerds. They just don't let anybody know about it. And those are the ones that you really hope to aspire to, you know, you aspire to be, you know, the guys that are way cooler than you that get to do nerdy stuff on the side. So, I mean, like, I mean, like, for example, like Nick Cage, like, owns like a bunch of comic books, and he's like a total geek when he's not being cool guy Nick Cage. Right. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. So inner geek is what you want people to express.
Well, express it outwardly as well. I mean, at the end of the day, nerds are they're the most downtrodden of the group. Everybody makes fun of nerds. It's easy to make fun of nerds. But if all the nerds in the world decided to, like, go on strike and just stop doing everything that we do, then the whole planet would collapse. Far quicker than if all the supermodels of the world or all the sports celebrities of the world stopped doing what they did. Like in other words, if every football player, every soccer player, if they all decided tomorrow that, like, we're not going to play sports, okay, then yeah, it would suck. It'd be a drag because people that get entertainment out of it, they wouldn't get to see their sports or whatever. But if the dude that runs the nuclear power plant decides he's not going to work, you got a much bigger problem.
Yeah, that's what he's
You know, the guy that designs, like, you know, new cars, the nerds that make the movies that you see, because all the movies that you see today are all done by computer nerds. So it's like, if they decide to just stop going to work, all right, good luck. Good luck with your nice skin and your muscles and shit. Good luck. You know what I mean? That's cool.
Yeah.
If police and military decided that they were going to stop going to work, think about how miserable that would be.
Yeah, that would be something that would definitely be more consequences than what meets the eye.
Especially to us nerds.
Yeah. Then you don't have the police protect you. But anyway, so with that being said, what songs do you strongly personally like?
You mean on my record? Or okay, on my record.
Yeah, on the album, yeah.
Well, every song is a flippin' masterpiece, man. I'm just kidding. I don't know. I've got songs that obviously I'm more proud of than others on the record. And it's funny because, you know, everybody that's listened to it has given me what they consider to be their favorite song. And good. If everybody only had one favorite song, then it wouldn't be a record then, would it? So the one I think that I'm most proud of on the record, only because of the sheer amount of work that went into it, would be the song number 8 on the record, which is called Woke. And it's an argument between a woke and a non-woke person, but done in the style of a Jeff Steinman Meatloaf song. So it's really epic and stupid. It's 7.5 minutes long. It's really overproduced. I hired a female singer named Samantha Martin, who's from Orlando, to do the guest vocals on it, because all the Meatloaf songs, all the classic Meatloaf songs, have like a girl that comes in and they do like a duet kind of thing. And so I wanted that element, and I hired a horn section out of Chicago to record all the horns that you hear on the record. So that's live horns, and it has that kind of live horn feel to it, and it's just ridiculous. It took me forever to write, not forever, but it took this record took about a year and a half, almost 2 years to create, from I'm starting to write it to I turned it in and I finished it, which is longer than I've ever spent on any record of mine. And part of it is because of this song. So the fact that it exists. Well, I mean, it's number one, it's 7.5 minutes long, so it's technically two songs worth of song. And it upwards over 100 instruments are playing at any given time. It's crazy. Yeah, because I mean, I wanted it to just be giant, and I hope that it gets heard that way. But it's yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot. I spent a lot of time building all of this stuff. And I also, at the same time I was working on the record, the audio aspect of the record, I was doing all the CGI work for the new music video for I Love Anime, which is available in 2D and in 3D. So yeah. So there was a lot of planning that went into the music video for anime, and a lot of audio planning and work that went into the song Woke, which is the song number 8 on the record. So, you know, I'm proud of all of the songs on the record, but some are a little bit more, I guess, closer to heart, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like anything else.
So the song Meatloaf, what aspect of Node culture was that?
Well, hang on a second. The song is called Woke.
Oh, Woke,
right?
Yeah.
And it's done in the style of Meatloaf, like Jeff Steinman Meatloaf material. Oh, okay. So the Woke song is like an argument between a woke and a non-woke person. And now I know that there's the exterior nerd version of woke, but then there's sci-fi woke, right? So the your science fiction nerds, like for example, you take the new show that's on the Star Wars show, The Acolyte, that's out. Have you been watching that at all?
I have not.
Okay, well, in my opinion, you're doing yourself a favor by not wasting the time. But it's just so poorly done, and many people would argue, well, you hate it just because it's more woke than your other Star Wars material. And I'm like, no, I hate it just because it's really not well written. But yet I've watched every episode because I'm waiting for it to get better. I'm hoping that it'll get better. It's like that. And some people would argue that it's some sort of political bias. It's not. It's just bad. To me, it's just bad story writing.
You sound like my coworker who watched Bleach. Didn't like it, kept watching every episode.
Yes, because what it is, especially for Star Wars people, right, like myself, who grew up on it, we're happy to just be there because we like looking at spaceships and people fighting with lightsabers and shooting blasters, and we love that stuff. And if there happens to be people on the screen that we also like, then it makes the show better. But you can dislike everybody on screen and dislike everything that they're doing, including the words they're saying, right? But still be interested in what's going on because you like being in that world. You like to experience that world. So it's the same reason why the people that hated on Star Trek Discovery continued to watch it, because at the end of the day, it was the only Trek that was on TV. And if you want, you can always revisit Next Gen episodes or Stargate, you know, or Deep Space Nine or whatever, or even original series, my favorite. But you've seen them all already, and you know what's going to happen, you know?
True.
So even, like, for example, isn't there anything that you've ever watched that wasn't as good as the first one, but you still watched it because it was part of it?
Probably the Digimon franchise.
Right, so whatever hooked...
Digimon Tamers and the other seasons wasn't the same as Adventure 1 and Adventure 2.
Right, it hooked you originally, which is why you became a fan.
Yeah.
And then you continued to watch the stuff that just wasn't as good because you're still a fan. And you're just hoping, that the writers get it and finally dial in to the reason why you're a fan, and you're just hoping for that. And it doesn't. Sometimes it comes, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. There's also another season of another show I watch, Yu-Gi-Oh, Zexal. I never got into it. Just skipped right past it.
You didn't watch any of it.
No. I just went to the next.
Did you like? But were you into that character anyway?
No, the entire style was different. It was more of a younger base, really weird in terms of the number hunting, and I don't know, the main protagonist doing good for me, so.
Yeah.
The reason why you watch the shows is the protagonist doing the battles, in a tabletop setting with the cards, and it just never connected, so I never watched it.
Gotcha. Well, like, for example, like I grew up on 70s and 80s anime, manga kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I was really into Macross. I don't know if you're familiar with the Macross.
Ooh, that was one of my top 100 episodes. When I was in two parts.
Well, you know, there was a whole series, there's a whole series of Macross that originally aired in like the early 80s in Japan, mm-hmm. and then made its way to the United States in the name of Robotech, and then they tied three completely different anime series together to make Robotech. They tied in, it was Macross and Southern Cross and Mospita. And they tied those three together and made 85 episodes of Robotech. And before that, when I was like 5 years old, 6 years old, there was a TV show in America called Battle of the Planets, which was the Americanized version of Gachaman, right? I don't know if you're familiar with Gachaman or not. And then
Isn't that like Super Sentai, I think?
Gachaman, it was like these teenage kids, that turned into like these bird-like superheroes. They could fly and do all this stuff, and they made a live-action movie of it actually in Japan.
I heard about that, and
it was cool, but man, it just didn't grab me, like, because I'm not seven, you know, so there's certain things that grab you when you're younger and they don't quite hold water. To me though, there's still things that, like, even as an adult, I get more out of Star Trek as an adult than I do as a kid. I get more out of Star Wars as an adult, the original stuff, as an adult than I did as a kid. I just read into the stories a little bit more. And
but the movie at the time was made in a way where future generations can still enjoy it, because I feel like it was made specifically for adults. Kids watched it but didn't fully grasp what was going on.
As a kid, man, I was just fascinated by Chewbacca and R2-D2 and Yoda and Darth Vader was awesome. You know, these are things that I loved as a kid, but I never quite grasped the idea of this guy picking a dude up by his throat and crushing his windpipe. I mean, like, as a grown up, that's pretty messed up. You know what I mean? That's pretty messed up to do to somebody. But as a kid, you're like, wow, this guy's spooky, he's scary, and you know, it's science fiction, so it's not real anyway.
Well, so, you also have the interpretation of how they were classed as characters, too. They are iconic for what they represented, and then the design was very simple, but told the story of the character on the screen.
Well, yeah, and I think that's what's missing in a lot of modern stuff. I think that one of the things that really bugs me is the whole alternate storyline cheat we're getting a lot out of Hollywood these days, where you know, you have this established kind of, and I hate to sound like one of these boomers types or whatever, you have an established canon of a storyline. Like, this stuff happened, okay, and you're supposed to write a sequel based on this stuff that happened. And when people say, well, I'm not good enough to write within those parameters, so what I'm going to do is create this alternate universe where I can tell the story of these characters the way that I want to tell the story of the characters, right? And then I can, by then, legally obtain writing credit and get, I don't have to pay as much in royalties to use this character, because I'm creating a whole new backstory and it's my story, so therefore I own it. And it's really just this kind of cheap way of earning publishing points from writers. Okay, and I appreciate the fact that, like, okay, you know, if anybody wants, it's a business and you want to make money, sure, I get it. But it also establishes how lazy you are as a writer, that you can't stick to the way a character is without ruining it for the people that like that character.
Innovations in writing, sometimes people want to do something new as a form of...
But cool, so make a new character. So make a new character. Like, for example, like in Star Trek Strange New Worlds, I don't know if you're watching the show or not.
Yeah.
Are you watching Strange New Worlds?
No.
Okay. So there's a character there that's named Noonien Singh. Her last name is Noonien Singh. She's a great character, but she's named after Khan, who was an antagonist in original series Star Trek, and then there was a whole movie about him where, you know, Kirk has to fight him and all that. It's called The Wrath of Khan. And how are we supposed to believe that she's serving on the same ship that her late great-grandfather, or whatever he was to her, attacked later on in the future, before even after she's gone. In other words, it's just lazy writing. Why put her that? Why give her that last name? Just give her a new last name. The character's awesome as it is. They did. They wrote a great character, but they based it on this idea that she's the descendant of an evil person that hasn't even existed in Star Trek canon in that storyline. So I don't know. I know that's confusing, but I know that in anime this happens too. They reimagine original storylines and they kind of retell it. And it's cool. I just think it's lazy. That's just me. Right?
True. They base it off folk tales and fairy tales, stuff like that, put in a non. They take the property, totally do a different meaning of it. But that storytelling was an entire creative project on itself. So, within the world of alternate storylines, comics are very famous for it for the simple fact there's different alternate versions of every single character.
I know. I just find it boring.
But at the same time, it's more that much crazy to keep up with. But anyway, with the music that you published, was there a Star Wars-centric vibe that you had going on?
Or well, every song talks about something different. So, yeah. You know, like, I don't even think I mentioned Star Wars on this record.
Okay.
I did on the last record. But this one opens up with a tribute to Star Trek. And then I talk about, the next song is about Glenn Larson, who is a famous television writer who wrote Buck Rogers and Battlestar Galactica and Automan. He wrote all these great TV shows. I have a song about afternoon cartoons that I grew up with, like G.I. Joe, Transformers, that kind of stuff. Then, of course, I Love Anime, the anime song, right? And then a song called Sign of the Times, which is about internet trolls and people that go on and just complain about shows and like I do, like I'm now doing, you know what I mean? Like, but, you know, it's self-effacing. And I have a song called Mint in Box, which is about a toy collector who meets a chick and they get married and have kids and he's not going to give up his toy collection, you know, because all this stuff is mint in box, man. You don't understand. It's mint in box. And then the woke song. And then I have a song called When the Season Starts Again, which is about binge watching television. And you know, you get through all 10 episodes in a week and then you got to wait a whole year and pay for a subscription you don't really want because that show only comes on that streaming service, and it's just kind of fun. Again, it's all designed to be kind of tongue-in-cheek and fun.
Okay. You know?
That's the idea.
So, when you're developing the song, what were the different aspects you were trying to capture? Like, is it just random thoughts that you wanted to convey, or is it specific moments that you felt you personally could write a song about based on your experience?
All of the above and none of it at the same time.
Okay.
So primarily, like when I'm writing Cosmic Punch, I know the style of music that I want to write. And then as the song is developing, I mean, I'll say to myself, like, you know what, this song should be about this this guy, this actor, or this genre, or this thing. And then I'll continue writing the lyrics and all of that pretty much after the music and the vibe of the song has shown itself to be what it's going to be. And very rarely do I write the other way around, where I have lyrics and then I write a song based on the lyrics. It's usually I have a cool melody line and a cool vibe that I've recorded musically. And then from there, I decide, okay, well, that song is about this thing because of the way it sounds. And then I kind of work from there.
Well, writing the lyrics first for a song is kind of weird, because then you have to match an entire melody to the sound of the lyrics.
True.
When in reality, if you write the melody, it's easier to write the lyrics to it, because then you just can have sounds that you can write it to the beat of the melody to convey that message.
Well, I mean, look, the other way around worked for Dylan. So, you know, he wrote the words first and then wrote music around the words, because he was never really a singer, a good singer, or a good guitar player, you know what I mean? But he was a great lyricist. Guys, like, think about this one. Bernie Taupin, I don't know if you know who that is. He's the lyricist for Elton John. Elton John doesn't write his lyrics. He has a guy named Bernie Taupin write them. So Bernie Taupin will give Elton all these, Elton, like he's my friend, he'll give Elton John lyrics, and Elton John writes music around it. How, you know, how the lyrics inspire him to write this song. So he's like, okay, cool, this is a cool idea for a song, because these lyrics do that. I know a lot of metal bands do it like that. They come up with the idea for the lyrics, and then they write music around the vibe of the lyrics. So why not, right? I guess it goes in different directions. But whatever, to me, it's always been easier to write the music first and then get inspired to write lyrics.
So when you had the music, set me down to the process. So you write the music and then you do the lyrics. What typical beat would you identify with creepy but fast paced? And then what lyrics would you try to go off that?
Creepy but fast paced?
Yeah.
Well, are you talking like Slayer fast? How fast are we talking? Death metal fast? Are we talking jungle techno fast? Are we talking caveman tango techno fast? I mean,
well, let's do a technical, a techno music, but and a fast beat with multiple rhythms.
Dude, I think that one of the most evil pieces of music ever written is the soundtrack to the original Street Fighter 2. like if you were to take all the instrumentation that's playing there and those noise trackers that they were using to make that soundtrack back in the old Super Nintendo days, and you ascribe that to like organs and death metal guitars, man, that would be some evil, evil sounding music, you know? And then in the background you hear Japan and you lose. You probably never played Street Fighter 2, did you?
Oh, I bet did. I saw clips of it in the medium was.
You never played Street Fighter 2?
No.
No vintage game.
But I know the medium. I know why it would.
Gosh. So, yeah, I mean, that's just my opinion. I love video game music. Especially the old 16-bit video game music when they were limited to what they could do. And they just really pulled it out of a hat. Like, I mean, the original Mario Brothers theme is, you know, dun, 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 dun. I mean, that's, like, that's so cool.
Sorry, in my opinion.
That's a
tidbit, I think.
What
now? Is that a tidbit? What's it?
Well, that's the original Mario Brothers, you know. Yeah, Mario Brothers, yeah, from the Nintendo.
So when you convey the melodies into the song, what type of lyrics would go with that melody to describe what's happening?
Well, it really depends on what I want to write about. If you want me, I'll write a song about Jell-O pudding. And I'll give it some heavy metal background and or techno background or country background, and I'll sing all about Jell-O pudding for yous. You know, I mean, I just whatever I feel like writing about. Multivitamins. I got a multivitamin. Here we go, and we'll sing niacin and riboflavin. You know, or
vitamin A at 12%.
You know, I mean, what do you want?
So. The feeling, the reach of children. What the interpretation is going to be of the music.
Yeah, whatever you got to write the words to fit the song, I guess. But I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing with Cosmic Punch, because nobody ever sings about the stuff in any genre. So I guess I can write however I want to write. I'm keeping it kind of a rock and roll, kind of classic rock vibe.
Yeah.
Only because I like making that music. And I think that we've heard enough love songs. And I definitely don't want to sing about politics or anything like that that would depress people. I'm not interested in bringing awareness to anything. So I let other people do that kind of nonsense. I'm just going to sing about the nonsense that I really enjoy. And I enjoy sci-fi and I enjoy pop culture and I enjoy what I enjoy. And everybody, let everybody else be miserable. That's not my bag.
True. If you were to give some insight into music itself and node culture, how do they combine perfectly?
Now, good luck finding or good luck making a record without at least one nerd in the mix. Someone's got to know what they're doing, right?
Well, how does music relate to node culture as a cultural phenomenon?
Good luck finding anybody in any industry that doesn't like Star Wars or Star Trek. And okay. If you find one, right, you say, well, dude, you're such a nerd, you don't even like Star Wars. Like, turn it around on them. You know, look at people that don't like science fiction or nerd culture in general, look at them like they're the pariah, because they really are. They're the ones that have no fun in life. They're the miserable old farts and young farts that don't have any fun in life. They're just too busy being angry and quote unquote being serious. Even give me a break, you know?
Okay. Well, I mean, a lot of commonalities with people that actually like different fandoms, TV, books, and sports tend to be the most popular. Very easy to get into, but very diverse and depends on what you're getting into. But with the anime fandom, it's a lot of bridging. You have the music, you have the SLT, sound on track, to the manga, to the actual manhwa and the other comics, but then you also get into like the fanfics, and it's like a bridge to all the different genres. Is that what you like, or is it just like something that is what it is?
Well, I mean, look, I like good fan stuff. I like extended universes. If I'm into whatever the property is, like, for example, in how many Power Rangers television shows were there? I mean, was it six or seven Power Rangers? I liked it, but I didn't get into it. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah,
it's not
a couple of seasons I watched the Power Rangers. So it was the original Dino Thunder, and I think that was it.
Oh, I think there's more than that.
No, that's what I watched.
Yeah.
And then I watched Dino Thunder. And then after that, I didn't really get into it as much.
Yeah, your tastes change and things move on. You know, I mean, like, it is what it is. But, no, I mean, of course, if it's something I'm into, I'm going to get into it. And I'm gonna get into it, like, full force. I'm not going to play around with it, you know, if I'm really into it. Some things garner my money and others don't, as far as my collections and stuff like that is concerned, as a fan of various genres of fandom. A fan of various genres of fandom. That's
yes.
whatever that means.
A fan of various genres of fandom.
Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. Because I'm at home at just about any kind of convention. I love sci-fi conventions. They're a blast, but they cost so much money. And you can't help but go in there armed with a bunch of money. And you have to buy something.
You know,
yeah, come on. Even if it's just an autograph with someone. I mean, I love meeting these. That's buying something. You're cheap. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I'm not cheap. I don't have the space to put everything.
Well, that's part of it, too.
The fact is, I'm very selective. I'm very simplistic. I don't need a lot of stuff.
No, I got it.
When I go to the convention, I go for the panels and the programming.
Sure.
I see what the vendors have. But if I spend too much time in the vendor section, then it's just like,
well, I know, I got it.
Something I want to buy, and then
I love the panels. I gotcha.
The conventions that only have a vendor space, and that's it for the entertainment, is
that's a swap shop
one time, but repeatedly doing that takes the fun away.
Well, that's a swap shop. That's not really a convention. You know what I mean? Like, I look, Lord love all the vendors. I have a really good friend of mine that's a toy vendor, and he's awesome. Super cool dude. Also a drummer. He's a heavy metal drummer. He's really good. He's like a really good drummer. But I do also enjoy the conventions. I'd much rather go to a convention that's got some cool guests. And I do collect autographs. It's like one of my little passions. And so I do wind up going and spending money and collecting autographs only because it's one of those things I could say, yeah, dude, I met that guy, you know, like, you know, and so, I have a hard time going to him without spending cash. And when you start having kids and all that stuff, man, it gets hard to find that extra $1,000 to go blow at some sci-fi con. So,
well, I've been to comic conventions, sci-fi conventions. I actually went to anime stuff, multi-fandom. I also went to, like, horror conventions, too. Pretty much every other convention I'll go to.
Have you ever been to Japan? Like, Japan?
I have not been to Japan, but that's probably one of the trips I want to take. I got my passport, so I can go international.
Save up. You're going to have to save up some cash. It's going to cost you, like, okay, if you want to do Japan, like, as a cool guy, minimum $5,000. If you want to go do Japan as the awesomest, most badass experience, if you want, you're going to do Japan, save up $10,000 to do it. And I've been there. Well, yeah.
I'm probably going to spend the money on the airfare and the hotels and then...
And then what?
Buying destinations that are...
Expensive to get to, because Japan is not a tiny place. So no, that's not. Well, I've been there a bunch of times. I'm telling you.
Sightseeing. Yeah. I'm more of a sightseeing kind of person. So
sure.
I would go to the tourist attractions, the shrines.
Yep. It costs you money to get there.
I'll make me a tile list of like maybe 25 places to visit. Take the train. Just visit around. Do like a.
Yeah, I've been to Japan. I've been to Japan a bunch of times. Okay, and I love it there. Okay, I love Japan. Okay, I love it.
Yeah, okay? There's always something to find that you can't about.
But telling you how expensive it is to be there. Getting there is not cheap. What part of the country are you in?
I'm on the East Coast.
Yeah, but okay, the East Coast is really big. What part of the country are you in? What city?
I'm near the capital.
Okay, you're near D.C. Okay, so you can get a direct flight to Tokyo out of D.C. It's going to cost you at least $1,400 round trip. At least.
That's
at
not
least.
Bad.
At least, and that's if you're going in off season. That means it is friggin' cold over there. Okay? True. If you go there in the season, which there's spring and summer and stuff, is quite nice. Okay? But now you're in $2,200, $2,500 range for a ticket. Okay?
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, this is how it is. All right? Each hotel night stay is gonna be a minimum of $200 for something, you know, cool to stay in. All right?
I'm gonna just find me an Airbnb.
Okay. If you want to do sightseeing, mate, you're going to be doing a lot of bullet train, and you're going to be going all over that group of islands that is called Japan, and you're going to be spending big cash, you know, $150 tickets, $200 tickets on the bullet train. It gets you there in a few hours, but then when you get on the other side, you're going to get a new place. I'm telling you, you need minimum $5,000 to do cool guy in Japan. That's eating good, right? Eating the good sushi and getting like the good
but
udon.
I can go to the convenience store.
You can, okay, I can, and I'll tell you the 7-Eleven in Japan rules. Okay, it's awesome. Do they have vending machines for everything there, mate? I'm telling you, like, it's awesome. No, it's awesome. It is the coolest place. And like, you know, you put in like, you know, 500 yen into which is the equivalent of like, you know, $3.50, roughly. At least it was last time I was there. And you put it into the vending machine, and out comes a can of coffee, this coffee called Boss Coffee that they sell there, and it's warm. Okay, it comes out of the vending machine warm, and it's the perfect drinking temperature, not hot, warm, like the way you want to drink your coffee. Everything is like brilliant. It's so well done. The vending machines are not chained to the wall or anything like that. They're on the streets. Nope, the culture is so beautiful and so clean and so pristine, and these people are so wonderful. But it ain't cheap. All that wonder ain't cheap. Yeah. Like I've been to the Osaka Temple. Or sorry, not Osaka, Kyoto Temple. I've been to Osaka Castle a couple times. But the Kyoto Temple, the big one, the big main Shinto temple. Okay? I believe it was like, I don't know, $10 or $15 to get in. It wasn't expensive to get in. But getting there was a train ride, $100, right? So, and you got to eat, and then you got to get from the train to there, and that's either a taxi or you're using public trans, and that ain't cheap. So yeah, $5,000. Get ready, $10,000 if you want to do it up and bring home stuff too, because you're gonna find all the cool toys in Tokyo. All the cool toys are there. There's a place called Kitty Land. It's a toy store. It's, I think, 5 stories, and each floor is, like, the size of, like, a mini Walmart, and it's just toys.
Yeah. Each floor. So what aspects of Japan was very included in your album? So I gotta know.
Well, I did write a whole song called I Love Anime, and it's all about anime.
Can you think of another song?
Well, every song has its own thing, so I can't really write about Japan. I can't really write about Japan in a Star Trek song, right? But if you watch, have you even seen the video for I Love Anime?
No.
No, because you're an evil human being. So you are.
I have not. I've seen it because.
Because you're evil. You're evil.
I thought this was coming up or something. I didn't know it was published. So.
Yeah, come on, mate. So the video for I Love Anime, dude, it is a total tribute to the art form. I wasn't screwing around. I made sure that Hayao Miyazaki and Osamu Tezuka and all of the greats. I have a whole in the music video, which is basically like as if you were on an amusement park ride called like an anime amusement park ride. It's all first camera perspective, so you see tracks in front of you, and the thing spins you around like on a Disney ride, and it takes you through these different rooms where there's different characters from all generations of anime. They're dancing and having a blast. And there's a whole room dedicated towards the end of the video of all the great artists of the fandom and the creators, the actual Walt Disneys of the anime world. It's a tribute. It's a tribute to the culture, and it's a tribute to the people that created the art form. So I really hope you and your listeners dig it. It is available in 2D and in 3D. So if you have like a Quest, Oculus Quest, or you know, Meta Quest now it's called. Or the new Apple glasses, or any kind of 3D electronics, you can dial into the YouTube channel and watch the video in 3D, and that's when you really get the vibe that you're on a ride, you know, that you're on an amusement park ride, an anime amusement park ride. So it's really fun, and I hope you dig it, and I hope your listeners, viewers dig it as well.
Gotcha. As we wrap this up with Cosmic Punch and All For Noid Khan, what is one thing you want to give to people in this entire discussion?
Well, I mean, the first thing is that if you don't like my record, then you're a jerk. I'm kidding. I always thought that threatening your audience, listen, you don't listen to my record, I'm going to come to your house and break your head. You know, insulting your audience, you know, that's always a great way to get people to listen to what you do. No, look, I really just hope that people find some joy in it. And I hope that they at least find one favorite song. And if you do, then cool, spread it, because we need a little bit more happiness in this era of anger and frustration, and rightly so. People can be angry about all kinds of things, and whatever makes people angry, good for you, I guess. But with me, it's all about trying to spread a little bit of love and spread a little bit of joy without being a hippie about it. So be a nerd. It's much cooler anyway.
Yeah, where can they find you again? And
CosmicPunch.com, CosmicPunch.com, CosmicPunch.com. From there, it splinters into the planet. And you can find the record there. You can find all the music videos there. You can see pictures of me, because I know everybody wants to. And, you know, just have fun. And you know, I just hope to spread a little
happy. I think they're just going to see you with headphones and think you're a big nerd.
Well, the headphones are the best way to do this kind of thing, mate. You know, you get the interface, and you try to be as pro as possible here. You know what I mean? Like, at least I can. I have no excuse to not have a nice microphone and headphones when I do music for my job. So, you know, I should at least have a good microphone and a set of headphones. So
yeah. All right. Well, that concludes this episode of Cosmic Punch and All For Noid Khan. So, with that being said, thank you for being here. It was fun having you. It was definitely a different episode than I expected, but it was actually fun. And you provided that fun.
I'm glad to have been of service.
So, I think they can all relate to you, and the way you present yourself was spot on.
Well, thanks. It was a pleasure being on.
All right, thanks. Bye.
This concludes another episode of MC Anime Podcast. MC Anime Podcast is available on podcast directories like Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and YouTube. We also have our website at mcanimepodcast.com. If you want to directly support us, then follow Patreon blog MC Anime. Finally, if you want services for hire, then we're available on Fiverr for audio and video production, graphic design, idea consulting, and blog and article writing.